Coming up on All About Android, it's me, Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our guest, Damian Wild from 9 to 5 Google. We talk about Samsung Unpacked. It's our 1 week later hangover discussion. Also, Pixel 4a, I happen to have it. We give that a first look. Android TV feature drop happens, as well as a bunch of little feature drops for a whole assortment of Android devices. Pixel 4 and 4 XL is donezo. We've got your email and a whole lot more next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? Well, LastPass can assure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially with everything else you have to consider today, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. And by LegalZoom. Don't let legal questions hold you back. LegalZoom is dedicated to helping you with the right solutions. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of the important things you need to get done. Hello, welcome to All About Android, episode 485, recorded on Tuesday, August 11th, 2020, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion. Hello.
Yeah. Hello to the two of you, and actually opening it up here because we do have the Brady Bunch on the screen. To the three of you, because welcoming to the show for the first time, Damian Wild, video producer at 9 to 5 Google, also host of the 9 to 5 Google Daily podcast. Damian, I'm a big fan. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I know you contacted me previously, but yeah, we finally got it sorted, even though there's time zone differences. But yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah. I know, and for that I have to apologize. We often have guests on this show who are not, you know, over here in the, you know, the three time zones that we exist in here in the U.S. or the four time zones rather. So as a result, you are up at 1 a.m. in the morning joining us, and for that, oh, I deeply thank you. Anyone who has to get up and sacrifice their sleep for this show, thank you so much.
No problem.
That is dedication. That's amazing. Thank you,
Damian. You have to give me the Matteo Doni Award for staying up.
Yeah.
Although when Matteo comes on, not to make it a race or a competition or anything, but when Matteo comes on, it's usually like 3 or 4 a.m. So his appearances happen to be like the absolute worst time, but apparently it doesn't seem to faze him that much. But anyone that has to sacrifice their sleep for a podcast, like I don't know if I would do that. Well, actually, I do know that I wouldn't, because my podcast studio is in our master bedroom. So that would mean my wife would have to sleep in a different room, and I'm not going to put her through that just for
podcasting. Okay, not that this is a race, but I did do 4 a.m. when I was in Romania that one time, or 4:30.
Oh, yeah.
That was, okay. And jet lagged. And that was my first night in Romania, so that was hard.
Also, it works in the other direction, because Jason, didn't you cover the Samsung event last week?
Yes. Yeah.
What time was that?
But that was 7 a.m., which is
still
that's
sacrificing a little sleep.
I was there watching
sleep.
You, Jason. I was watching in solidarity because I was there with the kid watching you and listening to you and Leo kind of pundit the show.
Because you have a young one. So let's be real. You were probably up at least 2 hours prior to that anyways. So,
yeah, it's true.
Anyways, Damian, it's really great to get you on. I follow 9 to 5 Google so closely, as you'll see in today's rundown. We have so many 9 to 5 Google stories in here. Also, partially because you're on and we like to focus your work and everybody at your site's work when we bring you guys on. So thank you for hopping on. We have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, so let's jump in with some news.
I could show you 5 new things that I can do, but here's Android news.
Oh, well, now I'm curious.
Not creepy at all. Not creepy at all, Burke. So, cool. Thanks for that.
I miss Burke so much. I miss the studio so much. I'm not going to lie. It was definitely...
Me too.
It was a constant in my week that I really miss Yeah. Well, anyway, while I'm missing the Twit HQ, we can talk about five new things coming to your Android phone, as was the big reveal this morning from Google. So we're going to quickly run through the five little things and then, you know, kind of talk a little bit about it afterwards. So the first thing is emergency location services are now available for 800 million people in 29 different countries. And this is actually a pretty big deal. So emergency location services, or ELS as they're known in some places, it doesn't require hardware, any downloads or updates. And this particular ability is built into Google Play services and will work for any phone running Android 4.1 and up, which is great. Some of the benefits of this include faster response times for emergency calls and better accuracy for location data. So if you happen to need assistance, it'll be a little more precise than just relying on, you know, standard old location data. The second big new feature are earthquake alerts. Now, you might be thinking, why do I care? I don't live where you guys live in California, but might I remind you, last week, North Carolina had a random earthquake. So this probably is very well timed. Android phones can detect earthquakes with the Android Earthquakes Alerts system. So it has its own name. It'll run on Android 5.0 devices and above. And if you're in California, you'll receive earthquake alerts powered by Shake Alert, which is kind of the West Coast's program for announcing earthquakes, I guess, split second before they happen. Basically, duck and cover at that point. On to a little more lighter updates to the Android sphere. Android Auto is getting a couple new refreshed features. So a little more contextual information, especially for calendar entries. So like smart displays, Android Auto will give us insight into the daily schedule, calendar events, and directions where you need to go based on those calendar events. You can also manage the preferences in the settings app, which you didn't have much control over before. So, you know, now if you don't want to be bothered while you're driving, you don't have to. Or you can have all the alerts come at you because you're just a busy bee with places to be. The fourth
aren't
feature
we
is
all
the,
these days
yeah aren't we all these days sure The fourth feature is a new, well, this isn't new, so we knew about kind of the bedtime features that Google had released a little earlier this year. So now the clock app will have a bedtime tab to help you actually maintain that consistent sleep schedule. Yes, even as things seem as grim as they are now, you can track your screen time and actually fall asleep with the aid of soothing sounds from the likes of Calm, Spotify, and what may soon be referred to as the dreaded YouTube Music, maybe, possibly. Anyway, previously, this feature was only available with some smart I jumped over a feature. The sunrise alarm is now available in the clock app. So previously, that was only available on smart displays like the Lenovo Smart Clock. But now you can use it on your phone, which is great. Adds a little more functionality, you know, for when you can travel again. You'll have all those features that you would on the Smart Clock. Now, the last feature that was announced today is very much for the accessibility-minded. So Lookout is kind of this oft-forgotten Google aid for helping those who are visually impaired, but it's been updated with two new modes and a more accessible design for everyone. Lookout can now scan long-form documents into readable text, identify products from food labels, and it's even more compatible with external screen readers. It also includes new languages and phone compatibility, and it automatically enables flash, so when you are using the camera to scan anything, you don't have to worry about whether that's on. The camera will be able to see even in the dark. I think these are all great little features, great little additions to the Android platform. Are you guys excited about any of these in particular? You'd like to go down the line with whoever would like to start?
I think living in California, the earthquake alert system is very interesting. Using the accelerometer of like a whole sea of devices to get at least a split second or maybe faster. I'm not really quite
duck
sure
and cover.
How that's,
that's, yeah, and ends that's up all we can ask for with regards to an earthquake alert. I did.
I'll take any advance warning I can get.
Exactly. I did want to add just very quickly, I was thinking about this with regards to the COVID tracing feature that they had built into Android. And I know that was also an iOS thing, but it made me think you know, on top of the emergency location services, just how many little things can be added to the OS to kind of make this, I don't know, it's kind of nice to see this being added to the operating system. And it's making me wonder, why the heck was none of this in there before, kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I feel that a lot with some of these like piece by piece updates that happen. It's kind of like, oh yeah, that, you know, my initial like instinct is to jump to that couldn't have been that difficult to put in there. Why didn't they do this before? But of course I realized like I've never actually made anything like this before. So that's who am I to say?
That's also the kind of tech that we're like, oh, we're living in the future. We should have, you know, like, and so it's kind of, I kind of made me scratch my head that it's 2020 and we're just getting this, but still, you know,
exactly. Damien, yeah, what do you know. Think about, Google's kind of strategy about here?
Accessibility features is like, I really think that the accessibility features are the kind of thing where you would think that smartphones in 2020 are kind of like really tapping into the accessibility side of things. I feel like there's a whole market of people who maybe don't have the kind of the tools at their disposal. And I think Google probably in the best position to do that with Android at the moment, especially with obviously the Lookout updates, which I hadn't used Lookout previously, but I've been trying to test it today. And it seems really, really good at determining text from documents that are even in, like you say, in poorly lit rooms and things like that. And I think that's where I would really love to see more development. And that's, to me, the accessibility side of things is where it's most interesting. Obviously, I live in the UK, so it's kind of earthquake alerts are not something that are going to be something really particularly useful to me. But
hey, you say that now. Hashtag climate change. You never know. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know if that's climate change or just tectonic shift change, but yeah.
It's all connected, man.
All connected.
I'm kidding. I know.
True, but I'd like to see as well, it'd be interesting to see the accuracy of each particular device OEM and things like that. That'd be kind of interesting to see if it's just if it's like you say, a sea of devices that are able to detect when an earthquake is incoming and things like that, or if one particular manufacturer is able to kind of be more accurate than others, because there will be false positives, I'm guessing, things like that. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting to see, like you said, Jason, how things are kind of getting segmented and then updated one by one rather than an entire OS update.
Yeah, we're seeing this more and more. This of course, addresses many different versions of Android, right? Like, I feel like usually when we see this, it's preceded by like Pixel update because they have the whole Pixel kind of feature drop, I guess is what they're calling it. But this is kind of like a feature drop for everyone, which is kind of neat. It's also in advance of the official release of Android 11. So one question I was wondering when I was reading through this is, we had, you know, Dave Burke from the Android team on a couple of weeks ago, and he alluded to the fact that we don't know everything about Android 11 yet, that there were going to be some feature announcements coming up. I'm wondering if these are the feature announcements. Obviously, they don't tie in directly just to Android 11 specifically. They're for many different versions. But do you guys think that this is what he was talking about, or should we expect more?
Because these are updated through Play services. So,
these aren't Android 11 specific.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And they're not Android 11 specific. By the way, eating boba while doing the show is a very bad idea, and I apologize in advance if I choke. Anyway.
Oh, don't choke. Don't choke. No one should choke on this show. It's okay.
My takeaway was that these are not limited to Android 11 phones running Android 11, that these are good. These are things available to any phone running Android because they're Google Play services based, or at least the majority of them. So I assume there's more to come with Android 11.
Although
I don't know, that's probably a pretty good segue to our next story, which is the Android 11 Beta 3, which is the final release ahead of the official release, is out. So if there are any tricks up their sleeves, they've got the final release to unveil them. But at least for now, with this latest Beta 3, Damien actually covered the biggest features in a video on 9to5 Google, so everybody should go check that out. But of course, big features are absent because it is so close to release. So there's nothing going to be total game changer in this one. There's a lot of refinement and tweaks and stuff like that. But there are some last-minute features, and we'll do a quick rundown, and then I would love to hear more from Damien about this. But the ability to force 90 hertz on the Pixel 4 returns, that was ejected in beta 2 due to screen flickering issues, so they seem to have fixed that. A slightly altered power menu when lockdown mode is enabled. So that's also something that's new. The ability to swipe away media that isn't currently playing in the new quick settings media player, which is great because this is something that drives me crazy currently on Android 10 is that media is in the notification pane. I can't swipe it away for some reason, even though it's not playing. So I'm glad to hear about this. Android 11 emoji, which is exciting anytime there's any emoji stuff going on. And of course, and I feel like we can take a little credit for this one, an Android 11 Easter egg. If you go to the settings and to the about phone and version and then Android 11 and tap a bunch of times, it reveals. And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, this came up in our interview with Dave and we nudged him in the direction of doing something like this, right?
I think that we asked a little bit about this, this sort of thing. And
we did.
Maybe this is one of the things that he was curious about. So I'll go into my Android 11 version, tap it a number of times. I get the volume knob that actually goes to 10, but if you keep going further, it goes to 11. Sometimes it takes me a couple of times to get there. There we go. It goes to 11. And then I don't know what to do from here. Supposedly, there's supposed to be like a cat game or something. Damien, do you know what I'm doing wrong?
Yeah, you need to activate your home controls. So the cards, it's part of the cards and passes update. So you need to add them as a home control. If you tap the, I believe it's the breadcrumbs menu and you can add, see other applications in the bottom left and you should be able to find cat controls.
Cat controls. All right. They really went for it. They really went to town this time. You got to give them props for integrating the Easter egg with a top level feature here. Although no, I'm not seeing it. Oh, I see cat controls. There we go. And now I can swipe to fill the water bubbler. I can tap to refill the food bowl, and I can tap to use the toy. Okay. Very good. My cat is happy.
Okay.
All right. They had one of these. It wasn't quite like this, but they had a feeding the cat one not too long ago. I can't remember which version it was, but it was the Katsume or whatever, the Katsumi.
Katsumi, yeah, that one.
Something like that that they integrated. I think it was like Nougat, or maybe it was the version before. So
yeah, Nougat. Well,
I will gladly take credit for this Easter egg because we it wasn't there when we interviewed and we gently encouraged him to do it. So, but Damien, so you spent a little time with the Android beta 11 beta 3. What are some of the best highlights, or what are some of the biggest difference that you've seen in this version?
I think it's just more the stability side of things. I think there's not as many kind of little quirks that kind of go wrong on a daily basis. I'm a Pixel 4 XL user daily, so kind of having issues with Google Pay and things like that previously, which was fixed in, I believe, 2.5. So it's kind of nice to have a fully fledged experience now. And I think it's just really nice to have as well the Android 11 just feels like it's so mature now that the changes feel minor, but they're just full refinements of what we've seen previously. And I think that that's kind of the most exciting thing about Android 11 this time around, whereas Android 10 to me at least felt as if it was more of a kind of a reinvention of what we'd seen previously. Maybe that's an overstatement, but yeah, I'm really enjoying the full cohesion with all of the little things that we saw throughout the first developer preview phases, and now excited for the full launch and full stable releases across the board, really.
Now it's like we're in that this is the couple of days before Christmas period, you know, we're like you can't get anything from Amazon anymore because you missed the shipping deadline, but like it's still very holidays and you know, and you're just waiting and you're waiting, and so now we're in the waiting stage. How long do we think until the release happens? What is it now? So we're at August 11th. What do you think? You think it's gonna be out before September?
That's a good question. Believe. Yeah. Is the rumored date September 8th, I believe.
Okay.
The day after Labor Day would make sense, which is a Tuesday.
I just almost said it would make more sense to do it on the 11th, but then I stopped myself because that would not be very nice. but then I said it.
It's okay. They can do it on my birthday. I'm happy with that.
True.
I can be the good thing that happened on that day.
Yeah, you are the good thing.
Yeah, there was some sort of a leak or something that happened. I know what you're talking about, Damien. That seemed to point to September 8th. So, yeah, long story short, we're probably not waiting very long. And then what really happens then? Well, the majority of Pixel devices will get it. More OEMs are getting better about bringing these out right away. Of course, Essential is really no longer. They were good at this. But I think OnePlus is pretty solid on this.
Yep.
As far as getting it out almost immediately, right?
That's pretty much it.
I don't know who else. Yeah. And that's it.
And I think maybe Xiaomi, but I just don't have experience with that because it's a very out of the U.S. manufacturer. I pretty much only think of OnePlus at this point. OnePlus and the Pixel is kind of the only devices that I would put in line with that. It's very interesting too, just think about how different the launch is going to look this year, because we're all just like, I know that we're all at home. And theoretically, it's not any different than years past, but I don't know. It's just something about it. It's just a different air around it. Maybe it is just because of everything that's going on. But I'm looking forward to the distraction.
Yeah, I am too. Definitely looking forward to the official release, and aren't going to have to wait much longer for that. Although there's always the people that are like, you know, you talk so much about these releases and then I'm on a device that doesn't even see it for like another year or whatever. And that's personally, that's why I enjoy owning the Pixel, because I just don't want to have to wait that long. But a lot of people don't care enough to change it up. So that's, suppose, also all about Android, right? It's about choice. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
All About Android choice. All right. Well, yep. We're going to pause this episode of All About Android. We want to thank our first sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter, our friends over at ZipRecruiter. As an employer, you've got a lot on your plate. You're running your business, you're ensuring workplace safety, which is so important these days, and much more. So here's an idea. Leave your hiring to the one place that makes finding qualified candidates fast and easy at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter makes the entire hiring process efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. Co-founder Gretchen Huebner at Codable found that hiring is challenging and she needed to hire a game artist to take her education tech company to the next level. Gretchen turned to ZipRecruiter and was impressed at how quickly she found qualified candidates. In less than 2 weeks, Gretchen had her new game artist thanks to ZipRecruiter. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Can't argue results like that. So see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter.com/AndroID. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. And with that, we're going to go into some hardware.
Let's do it.
Swipe right.
All right. Last week on the show, we talked about the news that the Pixel 4a had released, not released. It had been announced. It's going to be released on August 20th, I believe. So you still have a little more than a week to wait if you want to spend $350 on a very mid-range device by Google. And then I ended up getting a device, the Pixel 4a, like a day later. So it came a day late to miss the show, unfortunately.
It's our life story here at All About Android, yeah, by the way.
I know. It's just the way it goes. But I have it. I've been playing around with it. I'm going to be giving this the full review treatment on Hands On Tech next Monday. But I've been playing around with this Pixel 4a quite a bit. I mean, I've got my SIM card loaded in there. I've been relying on it, And so far, I mean, I feel like the reviews have been incredibly positive on this, as they were to the 3A last year. And as I was, I definitely consider 3A one of the best phones, in my opinion, of last year for a variety of reasons. This phone is right there as well. Like, I got to say, I'm pretty verklempt. Like, it's just been a great device, and I haven't really missed not being on my 4XL as a result. So just real quick kind of like first look, it has the plastic unibody design that is really kind of, I don't know, dull, I suppose, but you're not buying this for style points, let's just say. It still kind of has the Pixel quality to it, but it is a plastic unibody design. I took it camping, and I definitely got jostled around a few different times, and it took a beating, and I couldn't really find any marks on it. I thought it was a good kind of endurance test while I was camping to rely on this. I was pretty happy with that. 5.8-inch AMOLED 1080p display, 60 hertz refresh, so they're not doing anything fancy with like a high refresh rate or anything. Has the Snapdragon 730 on the inside, 6 gigs of RAM for $350. I feel like that is incredibly reasonable. And then 128 gigs of storage. So you don't find multiple configurations of the Pixel 4a. It's just this one configuration that I have in my hands right here. 12.2 megapixel rear facing camera, single lens up there, f1.7 aperture, and then an 8 megapixel front facing camera, which is the little hole punch camera up at the top, and then, you know, a little bit of the extras like the headphone jack, so it has an analog headphone port up at the top, USB-C, bottom firing speakers, 18 watt fast charge. And yeah, I mean, this phone is, if you've been considering waiting for the 4A because you knew that the 3A was as solid as it was for its price, well, then you're probably delighted to know that this is $50 less than the 3A was. So it's $350, and it gets most of the things right. And on my early review, anyways, it gets most of the things right that it really needed to land, right? The camera's great. It's svelte. It's light. It takes a beating. The display is sharp. The battery life is excellent. So I'm going to give this a full review here very soon, but I just wanted to kind of get this on the show briefly and just say, like, I'm really enjoying using this device, and I don't miss my other device. And I know from my perspective that when I'm using a device and I find myself not missing, like not wanting to go back and be like, but I just want to go home, then it's a good device, and I'm pretty happy with it so far. So yeah, that's the Pixel 4a. You guys got any experience or any questions with it?
I got to admit, seeing it up close like this, it really does seem like the 2020 Nexus 5.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's simple, understated, black, just, you know, it gets the job done. It just, you know, like, I don't know, it does have echoes of that.
Yeah, it has the fingerprint sensor on the back. I will say, like, I've actually kind of missed the face scanning that I have on the Pixel 4 XL. I realize how solid I feel like they've dialed it in on the 4XL. Having said that, I don't mind having a rear-facing fingerprint sensor at all. I definitely prefer it over the in-display fingerprint sensor, so I'm happy that they went with that. It's nice to kind of, it feels a little retro because, and it doesn't take long for things to fall into retro land. It wasn't very long ago that we had rear-facing fingerprint sensors on everything. And also, like, the feeling of the phone kind of, when I first took it out of the box and put it in my hands, like, it's just a lot smaller. It kind of felt like my instant reaction was, oh, this feels like a Nexus phone from, like, you know, the days of yore. So for whatever that's worth, but I don't know. I think it's a pretty nice device. So
did they have to just make it in black? They could have just throw a color chip into the manufacturing liquid. Just make it.
Well, I mean, they have a color power button. It's like a very, very, very light kind of blue. I don't know if it even comes out.
It looks white. It looks white on that. But
in person, it's kind of like a very light turquoise blue. So there's your color splash.
I guess that's black is, whoa. Whoa,
very close to Jason.
So, yeah.
Well,
so we'll have more on that
Those Amazon sales were quite, you know, that new, like I did do a double take on the on when I saw the headline that, you know, it's the number one best selling phone by Google, which I think is a little hyperbole and everybody kind of getting all crazy for it. But the reaction was, you know, it's undeniable.
Yeah. Yeah. Number one bestseller on Amazon once it was put up for pre-order. Yeah. Are you tempted, Damian? I know you're on the 4XL as I am. But
yes, I've actually pre-ordered from Amazon US, so that's hopefully going to come and get imported soon. So obviously in the UK, we've got to wait until October. So yeah, my US-based colleague is going to handle the review, but hopefully it'll come shortly after the actual release date as well for me here in the UK.
Right on.
Now, are Pixels a thing I apologize, I'm not like totally privy to this, but are Pixels like a thing in the UK? Like, do you pre-COVID when you would go out, would you see them in people's hands? You know, was it a device that people would consider?
I always see it as kind of, if I see a Pixel in public, it's still quite shocking. I still think obviously in English speaking markets, from my own experiences, it still seems to be Samsung Galaxy iPhone. There doesn't seem too much in the way. I think in the UK we've kind of had a little bit of a, over the last few years we had a push from Huawei and Xiaomi and the cheaper brands, but for the most part it's still predominantly iPhone and Samsung Galaxy devices. I mean, it's a shame. I think it's mainly the way the carriers push them in the UK, but there has been a definite encroachment of Pixel since the 3A. I've seen a lot more 3A devices, and if I give people a recommendation, it would usually be the 3A. I've got a couple of my friends are Pixel owners anyways, but that's kind of like who you kind of hang around with we all tend to like the same thing. So, but yeah, the Pixel brand is one of those things that I think is slowly starting to make inroads. But again, it's always difficult to tell, especially in the post-COVID world where you're not able to go out in public as much as you'd potentially like to. But yeah, hopefully we'll see some changes in the next few months, and maybe the 4A, when it comes out in October here, over here in the UK and in most of Western Europe, we might see some more people kind of jump on the Pixel bandwagon and really enjoying the camera.
Are you guys in the UK, are you getting kind of lambasted with the same coverage around some of the Chinese brands like we are? I'm curious. Like, is there like a Huawei is dangerous, you know, kind of sentiment, or
not so much? I mean, I think there's definitely, obviously, there's definitely a lot of anti Huawei sentiment of late, because obviously the UK government did a massive U-turn and decided that they're going to take out all the telecoms equipment. But the issue is that a lot of 4G infrastructure and 5G infrastructure in the UK is so reliant on Huawei that it's going to be really, really difficult to make that massive transition to another supplier. So obviously the smartphones have kind of unfortunately fallen off the map a little bit because of losing access to the Google Play Store, and they just become so difficult to recommend to people, even if the hardware is exceptional. But there isn't as much, I don't think, from my own outside experience of what the US media is like, it's kind of
you guys
kind of get it rammed down your throat that they are the enemy, if that makes sense. And well, I don't think it's necessarily as black and white as that. Again, it's a difficult one, but again, I think it's more of a gray area than black and white, really.
Sure. Well, thank you, Damian. I appreciate your perspective. Sometimes, you know, I like to get a little check in, and I haven't left the house from outside my suburb, so, you know, just checking in with the outside world. Speaking of the outside world, if you were hoping to get a Pixel 4 or a Pixel 4 XL on discount, you're kind of out of luck. It is officially out of stock for good in Google's US store. So a spokesperson had told Google that they sold through all the inventory and completed the sales of the Pixel 4, quote unquote. It's, of course, to kind of take this into consideration, it's not even a full year that this phone has been on the store shelves, so to speak. Again, remember, it was last October that this phone came out. It's not October yet. We've still got 2 months to go until.
Here's the thing about this, and I really take umbrage with a lot of rhetoric around the reporting of this story. There was a lot of – I was talking about hyperbole earlier, but I saw Dieter Bohn tweeted about it, and like other people kind of spoke about it and were very kind of, you know, wagging their finger at Google for this. They made a bunch of phones and they sold them. Right. Then based on their business, which has been impacted by a global pandemic, as everyone's has, and with two new phones on the horizon that are, you know, markedly better than these were, they made the decision not to make more. I don't fault them at all for that.
I agree.
There's no law that says the phone has to be out for a year. It has to be out for as long as the last version or anything like that. They like the way hardware manufacturing works is you order a number and then you make a decision if you want to reorder another number, and based off sales and based off all this sort of stuff, if the Pixel 5 was another 6 months out, then maybe they make a different decision. If they didn't have the 4A as soon as they did, you know, all these variables, and just like this decision does not define the death knell for Google's hardware business, which is a lot of the pundits out there were positioning in it. And, yes. You know, and by no means was I a fan of the Pixel 4 in any regard, but whatever, give them a break. They're making the decisions they have to. Hardware is hard.
Perfect.
There is, I agree with Ron, and I was going to say that the reason we're bringing up the statistics of how long, you know, the Pixel 4 was on sale versus the 2 and 3, which were on sale for 18 months, is to kind of bring to light the difference in the world, you know, the reason that we're at this point. And, you know, Ron is right. There's no point in selling a Pixel 4 and a 4 XL, even on discount. If the 4A is out, it's newer. You're going to get software updates longer than if you would buy a Pixel 4, you know, just kind of ballpark numbering it there. And it just doesn't make sense to buy it. It doesn't make any sense to order more of the phone. Not to mention, I know that there's been a lot of tepidness around the Pixel 4. It was kind of like, it's great, but it's not necessarily jump out and upgrade kind of phone. And I think Google got that message early on, and I imagine they made their numbers based on that. And, you know, the fact that we entered a pandemic in early March. So, yeah, it's been since March that this has been going on, by the way.
And it seems like based off the Pixel 4a sales numbers that they made the right call.
Yeah, I agree.
At least to me, at least.
I agree. I also agree with Ron in the fact that there's a lot of hubbub around what Google is or isn't doing. And just like, I don't know. I feel like whenever Google, for instance, whenever Google kills something, quote unquote, whether it's like software or hardware, there's this big like, this is what they do all the time. And it's like,
yeah,
it's just business, guys. It's just like the way it is. You weren't buying the phones. What do you expect?
Well, maybe that's what people are reacting to. You were buying the phones. People, you know, I'm just saying that would be the flip side is, well, there you go. People weren't buying the phones. That's why we're making a fuss over it.
It's like why they didn't make any more of the Google Clips. People weren't buying the Google Clips. Except me.
So true. So true. I almost forgot about the Google Clips until
two days ago.
I had a conversation about Google Clips with somebody. So. You have yours, yeah. Have you been using it?
Yes, I have. The app still works and everything. So.
Wow. Nice.
I tried to use the HTC Re, by the way. I went into, just slightly off topic, I went into my like hardware bin because I've just been at home apparently finding ways to procrastinate. And the Re has not aged as well as I thought it would. So that was a bummer.
I definitely forgot about the Re. Ron, I figured you would appreciate this next story.
Yes, and thank you, Jason, to give you kind of a behind the curtain how things work here. We all have our own little beats. They're little like corners of the Android world that we are all interested in that we like to cover. I have going on for 10 years now, an affinity for anything related to television and Androids, Android in the home entertainment space. And so it is very exciting that Android TV finally has some news to talk about tonight. So we got some details about Android TV's growth and what we can expect coming up from it. 80% more monthly active users in 2020 than in 2019. Explosive growth there in terms of active users. They're going to be adding new cinematic teasers into the interface, which is interesting, and getting a little more dynamic in that interface. If some of the other streaming services, if you've played around with them, see that they, you know, have a little, they're, you know, integrating motion video and things like that. So they're kind of catching up there. Google Play Instant On TV, that allows you to try apps without having to install them first, which is very similar to the instant apps that we have on Android phones, which is neat. Very excited for this one. PIN purchase support instead of typing a full password, which if you've ever tried to type your password with the clicky keyboard, with the remote, it's a pain in the butt. PIN is fantastic.
Such a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Gboard TV, the version of the keyboard, or the Google keyboard for Google Gboard for TV, is getting speech to text, predictive text, and additional layouts to make typing easier, which is great for when you do need to use that keyboard. And I'm fascinated by my use of Android TV with an NVIDIA Shield, the number of apps that haven't integrated the speech component in the microphone. Like, I got so used to it, like with Disney Plus, with Amazon, I just say what I want. And then I went to another app, I forget which one it was, and they didn't have it. I was like, why don't they have it? I need that. But anyway, so keyboard improvements. And finally, low latency support for better gaming experiences, switching off post-processing. So if you're using your Android TV for gaming, you can get a better experience there. And finally, Cast Connect. It's meant to improve the cast experience. And as longtime listeners know, I've got a lot of frustrations about Chromecast. When you cast a show on your phone from an app that you have installed in your Android TV, that app will handle the request, which, if you think about it, is just makes sense and is also super elegant in terms of a solution, because you remove the need to have the connection from your phone to the Android TV device. If it can auto detect that you have the Android TV app on your television device, why not just have it all be contained within there? Less chances of things dropping, which is great. And finally, it allows for hardware controller support of casted content. There you go. A little more hardware controller support with those casted content stuff. Great to see Android TV still being invested in, growing in. I love my NVIDIA Shield. Damien, are you an Android TV user? What do you think of Android TV?
I love Android TV. I have about 4 devices at home.
Wow.
Including,
which ones?
Yeah. I have a couple of the Nebula projectors. They have the limitations, but they're really, really great, made by Anker to kind of take here, there, and everywhere. I have the original NVIDIA Shield and the most recent one, and I have a Xiaomi, so technically 5, but I have the Xiaomi Mi Box S as well. I kind of switch between them every so often, but there's so many little mini frustrations with Android TV that I'm so glad that they're kind of fixing it with the keyboard as well, and the text-to-speech. And it's about time, but it's still far and away the best TV platform, I think, in terms of like integrated features and things like that. I've tried Apple TV. I've tried all of the other rivals. Is it Fire TV, Amazon's one? Sorry, it's quite early. Fire. I'm trying to remember.
Fire TV, yeah.
Yeah, so they just don't quite, even though, like I say, we have criticisms of Android TV, it doesn't quite feel as refined as Android TV, and it's just nice to see that Google hasn't given up on the platform.
It hasn't given up on it, but it's renamed it several times, rebranded it several times.
Sooner or later, it's gonna stick.
It's reinvigorated it.
Just keeps going back to the drawing board. It's like that perpetual project that you just never put down, and you just keep
But
we're benefiting from it. I mean, the NVIDIA Shield remains one of the best living room devices that you can have to this day. So,
and yeah, it really is great. And it's kind of fascinating to me when I think about how hailed the NVIDIA Shield is, because the way Android TV is designed, the UI is basically the same amongst all devices. So it's really interesting to me that the NVIDIA Shield is called out as a specific good, best case example of a UI interface that is basically the same on all different platforms. It's just the NVIDIA Shield does so many things so well and has such a longevity to it. And, you know, their update history is amazing and all this other stuff. It's just they do it right. And somehow they do it right. And it's such a great device. So it's definitely worth getting. If you're wondering what is the device that I get to really kind of show Android TV as excelling as a platform, that's the one that you get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. Let's take a break and then we will talk about a little bit more hardware, a little bit of apps. And then we've got some emails coming up, of course. But first, this episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. It's a whole new world out there. We're all faced with, you know, new challenges. We're all maneuvering these challenges. If you need legal help to overcome some of yours, well, that's where LegalZoom fits in. Maybe you've been wondering about the best way to protect your family, or maybe you're thinking about starting a business. A lot of lives are upside down as far as like what they're doing for a job. Maybe it's time to finally start that business. No better time than right now when things are uncertain. But you might want to do that, but you don't know the best way to do it. Well, don't let legal questions hold you back. LegalZoom has been dedicated to helping you with the right solutions for more than 19 years. Now, if you're looking to protect your family with a will or living trust, or you're thinking about the right way to start a business with a DBA, LLC, nonprofit, or more, that's why you turn to LegalZoom. They've got you covered. It's easy to get started online. If you need guidance, their network of attorneys can provide advice to ensure that you make the right choices along the way. And since LegalZoom is not a law firm, you won't have to leave your home and you won't get charged by the hour. So it just keeps getting better and better. I've been with LegalZoom for years using LegalZoom. We used LegalZoom to put together our living trust, our will. It was super easy. And this was a long time ago. And you know, they've done is improve the service since then. So if you have a family and you haven't done that yet, it's pretty important stuff to do. LegalZoom's the way to do it. That's what me and my wife did, and it really helped. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of some important things that you need to get done. Maybe you've been putting it off. Now's the time. That's LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. And we thank them for their support of All About Android. All right, we don't need a bumper for this because we've got more hardware spilling over here. And I would say, okay, all right, fine. Fine. Burke wants the hardware bumper. Burke gets the hardware bumper. He's got his finger on the button. Flo, what do you think about Samsung's phone announcements last week?
I'm just going to say Burke was buying me time because I was still chewing my boba from that ad. Listen, just being real here. Hey, so Samsung had a big event last week. Some of us got up super early for it. Some of us didn't have to. So good for you if that was you. And there was a lot of stuff that was announced at that event. Kind of overwhelming amount of stuff. But what we're going to focus on are the phones. So first, we've got the Samsung Galaxy Note 20 and the Note 20 Ultra. Now, both of these phones have Snapdragon 865 Plus processors, and both of them support a 5G network near you. Hooray! The Note 20 will retail for about $1,000 starting price. It'll have a plastic back and a metal chassis, as well as a 6.7-inch 1080p AMOLED display and a pretty sizable 4,300 milliamp battery pack. Note 20 Ultra goes up in price about $300, so it starts at $1,300. Very similar to the Galaxy S20 Ultra, but it has the S Pen. So the S Pen has also been kind of supercharged. The input latency has been reduced to 9 milliseconds for lifelike precision. And from what I've been reading about this thing and what I've been seeing from fellow colleagues, I am hearing that it really does feel a little different from the last couple of generations. So I'd be very curious if, Jason, you get one of these in your hand. Mm-hmm. See, you know, what you think about that. A couple other little specs to put out there. Glass sandwich on the Note 20 Ultra. In addition to a metal chassis. 6.9-inch Quad HD Plus display with a centered hole punch camera. The camera system now has laser autofocus. It also has a UWB radio for enhanced nearby file sharing and smart home connectivity. I'm sure that's TBD on its true effectiveness at this point. And of course, for those of you who just aren't happy with the storage options that Samsung offers, there is a micro SD slot that you can put in a little SD card in there. I think it's still like up to 2 terabytes, I think is where we're at now in the SD card world. So, wow. We also had a little phone, a little foldable phone that made its debut toward the end of the presentation that Samsung had last week. The Galaxy Z Fold 2. Now, this is the successor to the first Galaxy Z Fold, the one that had problems. So they've since addressed many of those downsides. They put a hole punch instead of a huge notch for the camera, for instance. And the front display takes up the full face of the device rather than this like little pocket window that used to be there. And of course, you can't supposedly peel back that screen. So that's something to look forward to. Either way, there's all three new things from Samsung to look forward to. And of course, it's worth noting, and I've been reading a little bit about this too, Samsung planned all of this before we're going through what we're going through right now. So if you might be thinking, oh my God, $1,000 for a phone, $1,300 for a phone, remember, this was all blueprinted at a much different time with a much more optimistic outlook ahead. So it'll be interesting to see how it performs.
Yeah, so I think a couple of interesting things, and I'm really curious to hear everybody's take on this. The Note 20, the $1,000 device with a plastic design, 1080p display. I mean, we're talking, it was not very long ago that $1,000 was like a redonkulous price for the top of the line device.
It's still a redonkulous price.
It is still a redonkulous price.
A lot of money.
But now suddenly we're getting what some people might consider lower premium or a higher mid-range spec sort of thing.
Higher mid-range,
right?
Like, at $1,000? $1,000 is...
No, I'm not talking price. I'm talking the features for that price. For $1,000, you're getting the plastic back design. And I know there are always those people out there that are like, yeah, but I still love plastic and everything. But it seems like most phones in this price category are glass back. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, just pointing out a fact. And then a 1080p display on a $1,000 device. I don't know. There's just something weird with that price and some of these features. Does anyone else agree? Tell me why I'm wrong.
I agree. That's why I got very sorry to jump in before everybody, but it's just like it's really it frustrates me that we're at this price point and that the idea of mid-range would come to your mind to categorize it because you know I've been looking at lower priced gadgets the last couple of weeks because of some of the work I've been doing and. There's a reason that it's priced the way that it is. And this is just, you might as well just say Samsung, this is their premium line. They should just say that.
And it really is. Although now these foldables seem to be a different category of premium. But Damien, Ron, like, how do you feel about these phones? Damien, were you following along with the announcement? Or are you a Note fan?
I was a Note fan, weirdly. I had every one up until the Note 10 Plus last year. And I just think the convergence of the S line and the Note line meant that it just makes it a really difficult buying decision. I think the pricing as well, the pricing structure this time around is, I mean, the more I think about the $1,000 or the €1,000 or £1,000 pricing, it seems ridiculous on face value, obviously, given the S20, the standard Note 20, specifications. But I think if you're going to use a device, and potentially I'm not sure what the in air quotes average consumer does, but if you're happy to keep a device for 2 or 3 years and you go top of the line, then $500 a year, for instance, on a $1,500 phone is probably not far off, is it? It's probably not that drastic. But I think, like I say, the sticker price is always going to be putting people off. But I do not know what the strategy was with the Note 20 this year. It just seems really convoluted, even more so than it was last year with the S10 and then the Note 10. It just, do you want an S Pen? No, stick to the S20 line. I don't really know where else to go from that, really. Samsung's been a bit confusing this time around, but the I'm going to hold it for the Z Fold for us Europeans. The Z Fold 2 looks phenomenal. It feels like they've learned more from the mistakes with the original, but then just made the same mistakes with the Note 20. So sometimes you just got to wonder what Samsung are doing.
They're only human. They're not perfect. Right. I mean, it's Samsung, right? We're going to, it wouldn't be something if there wasn't something to talk about here. I was going to say the Note, I have nothing really to say that hasn't been said about the Note, but Damien, you're echoing exactly what my thoughts were about the Galaxy Z Fold 2, is that I love the fact that Samsung did not allow themselves to be defeated by their missteps with a foldable and have just stuck with it and stuck to the drawing board. And, you know, this looks great. I would like, I can't wait to get my hands on this one and check it out. Cause it feels like they've iterated and grown and made a device now that isn't a punchline.
Yeah, they really kind of addressed the major, the critical issues from the first Fold with this one. You know, obviously they address, well, at least we hope they address the mechanical errors that would allow for ingress and dust and everything to get behind the display. So let's cross our fingers that they got that right this time around. I'm pretty certain they have, but hey, who the heck knows? But the weird like notch looking thing that always just looked very funky on the first one, that's now appropriately treated with just the single hole punch. The full display when it's all folded up now is actually the entire device the way it should have been initially. We're talking earlier about, you know, Flo, I think you mentioned it as far as like, why didn't you just do this the first time? And it was so interesting watching this announcement and being like, yes, this is how it should have been from day one. But I guess you got to take baby steps to get there. And so we wouldn't be here if we didn't have last year's Fold. And who knows, maybe we wouldn't have a solid screen design if last year they hadn't died in spectacular fashion the way that they did with dust and all those other things. So,
yep.
Yeah. It wasn't just phones, though, of course. Just real quick, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this, but Samsung did also announce the Galaxy Buds. Those are the bean-looking in-ear true wireless earbuds. $170, IPX2 water-resistant, active noise-canceling. Curious to try these out and see. I feel like reviews have been kind of mixed on these. 6 to 8 hours of charge, depending on whether you have the noise canceling activated or not. 21 hours of extra charge with the charging case. Since the Galaxy Buds Live, they do look different. I'm very curious to know how comfortable they are, I guess, is the thing, and how well they fit a wide range of ears. I guess we'll find out. Also, the Galaxy Watch 3. Yes, the rotating bezel watch is back, so thankfully they have that still in there. More of a focus on health tracking this time because they've had such success with the active line, so I think they're pulling some of those features in here as well. Excuse me, two different sizes, 41 millimeter and 45 millimeter. Qi charging, of course, 2 to 3 days or 1.5 to 3 days, depending on whether you have the smaller version or the larger version. And then finally, we don't talk a whole lot about tablets on this show these days because there really aren't a whole lot. Mm-hmm. There's even less Android tablets that are like premium Android tablets. Samsung's really the only one that comes to mind that's really doing this with any sort of conviction with the Tab S S line. And so they've got the Tab S7 and the Tab S7 Plus. Snapdragon 865 Plus, so yes, 5G supported. The S7 has an 11-inch LCD panel display. The S7 Plus has a 12.5-inch OLED display. Both support 120 hertz. So I think this. I think they were saying this is the first. These are the first premium tablets on Android that support 120 hertz refresh rate. S Pen support, optional book cover, keyboard with a touchpad, and that actually activates a DeX mode, which when I thought about it while they were showing it off, I was kind of like, okay, this I kind of get more than I want to plug my phone into a random dock with a monitor and a keyboard that I just happen to have somewhere. Like, at least with the laptop case, it is truly a tablet when I want it to be a tablet. And then I snap it into this laptop case that doesn't take up much space in my bag, and it turns into the Dex version of that tablet. I don't know. Something about that makes more sense to me. $650 to $850 for the tablet alone. Another $200 for the keyboard folio case. Any of these devices kind of have you guys excited or interested? Curious.
I'm definitely curious about the Galaxy Buds because, as we all know, I don't like things inside my ear, and it looks like those could be a good solution. But $170 is a lot of money to spend on earbuds.
Yeah, sadly, personally, that's a pretty standard price for true wireless earbuds, especially with active noise canceling.
What did I pay for my Pixel Buds 1? Did I pay $99 for those? Or
yeah, those first they were in the double digits. They were in the double digits somewhere. Yeah,
I feel like $100 is my limit there, but that's me. Maybe I'm cheap.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, especially now that I'm not commuting. You know, whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Especially now. Yeah. Yeah, and then Flo, I imagine you probably were interested in the watch because I know you follow the Galaxy watches and the Watch Active.
Yeah, I've been actually kind of bugging Charlene from Engadget about her time with it. So from kind of what I'm gathering, it's the Galaxy Watch Active that I have, the first gen, remains the perfect watch. So I'm hoping Samsung continues to support it and support me in that journey, right, that watch.
and then Damien, how do you feel about Android tablets right now? Are they kind of a lost cause? I've completely stopped really paying very close attention to them.
I think
I don't know. What do you think?
It's a tough one. What can you do on an Android tablet that you're not going to do on a reasonably large Android phone screen? So, I mean, I picked up the iPad this year. I've never owned an iPad before in my entire life. I just gave up. You kind of got to go to the other side of things. At least I can use Photoshop properly and potentially use Adobe Premiere Pro at some point on an iPad. Maybe never on an Android tablet, but I was excited for the Pixel Slate, but hey, we won't talk about that one. We won't talk about that one.
Yeah, me too. I actually used it for quite a while, but then I ended up switching back to my Pixel Book. So I suppose that speaks volumes. All right, so that's Samsung's fun event from last week. I will be getting the Note 20 Ultra whenever it starts shipping. So I have that on order. I'll definitely show it off on the show and give it a full review at some point when I get it. So I'll keep you posted. And we have a quick app block right now. Let's jump into apps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brought to you by Ron.
Brought to you by me. So a couple of interesting things. This app that I wanted to spotlight for you this week caught my eye, because at first I was like, okay, we've been talking a lot about file transfers because, as we all know, Google's rolling out their answer to AirDrop, right, and that sort of thing. But as we also know, Android 11 is coming, and that would be a part of it. But not every phone always gets, you know, Android 11 that quickly, and there are phones out there that won't get it, and all this sort of stuff. So what about all of us that have earlier versions of Android that want to be able to transfer files in an AirDrop kind of manner? And so I was like, all right, well, what options are out there? Then I stumbled upon the app we're going to talk about tonight called DodoDrop, DodoDrop Secure File Transfer. And apparently, I was doing some reading on it, and a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how India and China are having a skirmish, and India banned a bunch of Chinese-based apps. Well, apparently, from that action, there has been a explosion of app development out of India. And this app, DodoDrop, was developed by a 17-year-old kid in India as a replacement of a previously used app that he used that was by a Chinese developer. So I love the idea of, in a vacuum, you know, this kid in India who's like, I like to transfer files with my phone wirelessly. Oh, no, I can't. Well, I'm just going to make my own app. And guess what? It's actually pretty decent. It's actually pretty good. So it's called Dodo Drop. And here I've got it up on my phone. If, Burke, you want to show my screen. And yeah, so when you open up Dodo Drop, you got to go through all the permissions. You got to give it access to your file system and all that sort of stuff. And as we all know, you know, as we go into our settings, the key thing that we have here is that there's a dark mode. So you can turn on dark mode if you want, and that will have the phone go, have the app go dark. I'm going to keep it on light because it's a little easier for our friends watching on video. But when you do it, you set up in the settings. You give your phone a device name. So I'm going to just call this Ron's. There you go. And basically, what happens is that. There is a file explorer within the app, and it allows you to search through your files. You can go through internal storage or through a Dodo Drop folder or through your documents, downloads, music, and photo directories, similar to any kind of other kind of standard Android file system. And when you go on transfers, you have two options. You can send or receive. So if I'm going to send – I need to choose the file that I'm going to send. So I'm going to – and here in the browser, you can go through apps, your files, music, photos, or videos, which is great. And I don't really know why the photos aren't loading in there. But I'll go to music. I've got some random thing, so we'll do that. Looks like a podcast file. So we will choose to send that. And so now what you can do is you can add devices to transfer to it. And so you can choose a device to transfer to the phone. And what you can do is you can show a QR code. And what that does is it allows you to start a direct hotspot on your phone that is independent of the Wi-Fi system that you're on or anything. And am I still broadcasting there, Burke? Are you still getting that or no? It looks like you're not. Let me restart that. So un momento. Stop. So for those watching a video can see it live here. One second. Live demos. Screen leap crashed. I apologize.
It happens.
Damien knows. Anyway, all right. Well, so I'm going to it looks like Screen Leap has died. So but what happens is that in the app you can set up a direct hotspot using the Wi-Fi in your phone that another device can connect to, and then you can seamlessly transfer files very quickly, up to 480 Mbps, whatever, per second, meg per second. And I was testing it between my two phones earlier, and the files were just snappy. They were just going very, very seamlessly, very quickly. It also has what's interesting, like, almost like a text transfer. There's a little area in the app where you can write text messages and send them to whatever device that you're connected to, which is kind of funny, and I don't really know why it's there. But because the core function of this is the ability to securely transfer files from one device to another, and all the other device needs to do is scan your QR code and then get connected, and then it all works. So yeah, so it's very cool. It's very interesting. 17-year-old kid did a pretty good job. So definitely check it out. Dodo Drop secure file transfer. If you're looking for a way to transfer files, if you're not running Android 11, if you don't want to use Android solution when it comes out, or if it's not compatible for you, you're looking for another kind of option, Dodo Drop is worth checking out. And I was super impressed not only by the initiative, but also by the execution. So yeah, very cool.
Nice. An alternative to Android's nearby sharing, yep, as it were. Dodo Drop. Nice pick.
17 years old. When I was 17, I was not making Android apps, but I was also, it was also 1994, and I should have been if I had only known.
Yes. Yes. You should have done differently, Ron. Otherwise, you wouldn't be on this show if you had done that, though. True. World would have gone in a completely different direction. So we're happy that you didn't run.
I was programming in Turbo Pascal in 1994.
There you go.
Badly. Badly.
All right. We're going to jump into email, AAA@twit.tv. You can also, by the way, leave us a voicemail. We don't get a whole lot of voicemails, but if you want to do that, 347-SHOW-AAA. Chuck wrote in to say, well, I did it. I moved everything from Play Music to YouTube Music. Now for the big fail. I work around the house and in my garage workshop without carrying my phone in my pocket. I don't want to get it damaged. To control the music, I use my Wear OS watch to jump to the next song or to pause the player. While Google Play had a Wear OS app, YouTube Music does not. I guess after all these years, I'll be searching for a new music player. Bummer. And it's true, as Google Play Music goes away, you know, so does control in Wear OS, but YouTube Music at this point anyways does not. Now, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, you know, there are other music and audio apps that can be controlled there. However, YouTube Music right now, so far, cannot, and that's strange.
I have to imagine they're going to add. They need to add. The FlowShare an article this late earlier. The Ars Technica did a thing on mm-hmm. Google acknowledging some of the shortcomings of YouTube Music and doing work to, you know, catch it up. And I gotta imagine that this is the kind of thing they're gonna do. I don't know. I still haven't finished my transfer because I'm horrified that I'm gonna lose everything, and I just don't have the time to untangle it. And meanwhile, the clock is ticking. So I don't know.
I had the experience over the weekend. You know, I was camping and I was sitting out in the stars, stargazing, looking for meteors shooting through the sky, meteorites. And I ended up using YouTube Music to go in to search by artist to get to albums. And I had that frustrating experience with YouTube Music that I just absolutely hate, where you go in through artists and you find the artist, and then you go in there and it's like just like an unsorted random list of all their yep. songs. Instead of like Bingo. Giving you, okay, there's the artist. Now here's all their albums. You know, and I just want to get to the album. So the only way that I can do it then is to then go into the albums view, which is every single album in my library, and scroll until I find the album for that artist. And there we go. Now, it's just so backwards and weird. Damien, do you have as many frustrations with this whole YouTube Music transition as we do, because we can't shut up about it on this show?
I did initially, yeah. And then I decided to swap back to Spotify again. An early adopter of Google Play Music, and I had about 15,000 tracks on Google Play Music. Luckily, I got the opportunity to transfer them to YouTube Music, and then I don't think I've listened to a single song that I own or I previously owned because of the frustrations of, as you just said, trying to find a particular album, trying to find a particular track, and then I'm a real stickler for having album art and things like that. And if it didn't have it initially on the initial transfer, it would bug out, and maybe I wouldn't have album art for like 3 or 4 days until the original transfer finalized. But yeah, the transition's been difficult, so I just decided to go back to Spotify and just create a brand new account and start from scratch.
Yeah. Ooh. I think a lot of people are going to be doing that, probably.
Harsh.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might get there.
It might. Well, I don't know.
I keep giving it the benefit of the doubt.
I gotta assume that they want to. They want to get it there, right?
Yes, of course they do. And they have a lot.
This is the year.
An interest too.
This is the year that we're gonna go back to having our own digital libraries that we curate. Like, I'm saying goodbye to algorithms. I'm saying goodbye to memory hogging apps like Spotify, because oh my god, that app is so heavy on the desktop.
Yeah.
This is the year we really need to, you know, reclaim our individuality.
I've said it before and I said it again. It's not perfect, but PlexAmp, if you have a local library,
that's exactly
you can get a Plex
what I'm
server.
Thinking of. Yep. That's what I'm working on right now. So,
yep. If I had the time to really, whatever, that's time. Well,
if
this
we
is a good segue to. It's a good segue to our next email. Joe writes in and says, this one's for Ron. A few months back, I decided to upgrade my Google Play to the family plan. What I didn't realize is that the new family plan didn't give me ad for YouTube. That was a deal breaker. I contacted Google support using the chat on my Pixel and explained what happened. After about 10 minutes, the rep was able to convert my family plan to a grandfathered family plan, giving me ad for YouTube again. You may want to reach out to Google support. They were really helpful. Thank you, Joe. My whole thing is that I've got multiple subscriptions to YouTube and to Google Play and Google Play Music, and I'm the combination of losing ad for YouTube and losing my library and all this sort of stuff. I'm keeping it the same. I just don't have time to deal with it. But Joe does also write in, and I wanted to talk about this before the show ended. On a side note, Joe says, I was listening to episode 484 this morning, and you guys mentioned the removal of the frog and the weather app, or what Ron has been referring to as Froggate. Joe said, I was devastated until I checked, and to my relief, my frog is still there. So Joe, thank you for letting us know the status of your frog. I have an update to everyone about the frog in the weather app. After last week's show, I posted to Twitter about it. I did an angry tweet to Google and to Android going, "Why'd you get rid of the frog?" And then someone replied back and was like, Ant Pruitt wrote back and was like, just do a hard reboot and it'll come back. And I did. And sure enough, my frog has returned and has been there ever since. So the reports of the frog's dismay were early and inaccurate. I'm happy to report the frog is A-OK and living nicely in my phone. And Jason doesn't have the frog. Did you reboot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely rebooted really? This. Let me see on my Pixel 4.
On a hard reboot?
XL. Let's see here. 4X.
The little frog star. He's looking at stars. See? There he is.
So are you tapping the weather app on the home screen?
Is that how you're doing that? I am. Yes. Here is my home. Here, let me turn down the brightness and I'll show you what I'm doing. Because ScreenLeap isn't working.
I have had it and now it's gone away again.
There is the little weather app, right?
Okay, all right.
Where's my big fat finger? And I can't see. And I tapped the news by mistake. Anyway, so I'm tapping the weather icon, and I get the little froggy guy start looking at the stars. And it's 81 degrees. And listen, and also, just so everyone knows, to do the show, Burke makes me turn my air conditioning off. It is currently 81 degrees in New York City, but feels like 88. So there you go.
That's with humidity, everyone. That's with humidity.
Yeah. Thank you, Bert. But anyway, the frog, if you're not seeing the frog, do a hard reboot. Shut your phone down.
Right.
Let it sit for a couple of minutes and then do that. It's not a restart. You can't do a restart. It's got to be a hard reboot.
Okay, so it's not a restart. I got you. All right.
Yeah, no, it's got to be a shut the phone down and then come back with it.
Okay, I'll try it. The frog is too important. It's too important.
It's so
not
important.
To.
It's an important frog. So, or as someone on Twitter who wrote back to me and said, it's actually a hard ribbit.
Ah! Oh, that's good. Patoots. No, love it. All right, Flo. Oh, whatever, Berg. Flo, you've got the last
over
one.
My head, too. Hey, guess what? I have the honor of reading the email of the week.
There we go.
So the email of the week this week comes cordially from James Gowdy. James wrote in, I have noticed that when a new Samsung device gets reviewed, nothing is ever spoken about the update policy. I bought a Samsung phone and a Samsung tablet. As soon as the next model was out, they stopped with the updates and security patches. I'll never buy a Samsung product again until they change. I feel that it is a disservice not to talk about the update policy when reviewing products. Yeah, it might be the prettiest, slickest phone around, but if it's going to get hacked in a year, that's bad. So I would suggest that when you are looking at new devices, that you would include some discussion about the track record and security updates involved with that product. Cordially again, from James. Thank you, James, for writing in. I do think this is a very important thing that you bring up. Years ago, when I was reviewing phones, I was always looking at what the software updates were like. And this was kind of pre-security update time. And I feel like now, I mean, we were just talking about this, a mere half hour ago, it really feels like if you want the latest software in the Android world, you need a Pixel phone, or the next tier is OnePlus. And that's only because OnePlus is really marketed like that ability. It's really has a proven track record for that. It's also frustrating too, as a user, to realize that Samsung isn't like serving you, because Samsung does have all this money to put out three different phones in one, you know, in one keynote, announce three different phones. And yet, where is the software development? Where is the team that is making sure that all of these devices, including that tablet that was announced, who's there to make sure that all these things are updated and that they work on the different carriers that they're offered with? It's just, sometimes I feel like the best thing that could happen would be for these manufacturers to come through and say, here is a universal standard for software updates that we want to put through as third-party manufacturers. Like, maybe that's a pipe dream, but I just imagine, I feel like that would be the next best thing, because I know Google's doing so much on their end to ensure that the manufacturers follow through with software and security updates, but we're seeing a different kind of track record from the manufacturers that we talk about on this very show.
It's true. It's true. And we talk a lot on the show about the importance of updates. So I think it's a fair point, right? Like when we review and take a look at phones, it's good to at least understand what the history has been around updates to be able to point to it. I always, my knee-jerk reaction is to defer to the handiwork of J.R. Raphael, friend of the show, over at Computer World and the Android Intelligence blog. He does a report card for updates, and you know, his latest one was Android 10 upgrade report card. Can't remember when he published this, but even looking at this, right, like Google gets an A, OnePlus gets a B, Samsung is at a D plus firmly. It says 0 out of 10 points for poor communication at the very least. 106 days is the length of time to upgrade for the upgrade of Android 10 to reach the current flagship. So Android 10 is released, and almost 4 months later, the update is finally rolled out. One would hope that this improves over time. Samsung has stated that they are committed to 3 major OS updates for every new flagship starting back with the S10. What's that?
Sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just they're committed to it, but like, when is it coming through?
When?
Because, you know, a Chromebook, for instance, those things are getting updates for years and years. You can go to the Google support pages. You can look your specific model of Chromebook, no matter when you bought it, and see when it expires, and it gets updated in the background. We're not getting that same treatment with the phones that, you know, they're more proliferated. Like, It's a frustrating thing, and I've been on this show for, what, like going on 6 years now? 5 years now? And the same time that we're talking, you know, the same thing we're talking about over and over again.
Yeah. Indeed.
I wonder how much of that is due to the fact that Samsung is still trying to push their One UI software skin. Mm-hmm. So like, there must be some development of their third-party skin that is preventing them from pushing it as quickly as they possibly should. I don't have an answer, but it'd be interesting to actually see if Samsung's R&D on their software side is really hindering their ability to get updates out the door.
Well, because it's no question, like of OEMs out there, Samsung is a very customization heavy skin, right? And they've improved it. I feel like Samsung has come so far in improving their skin. It used to be TouchWiz, back in the TouchWiz days, man, I hated their skin. Now it's actually pretty reasonable, but there's a ton of stuff in there. Now that's features, and a lot of people rely on those features and want that variety. And I mean, it's the kind of OS skin that you really have to, like, you have to be in there a lot in order to find all the hidden nooks and crannies and features and everything. Everywhere you turn, there's like a new feature, and that's great from a feature perspective. But I think you're absolutely right, Damien. It probably slows down everything on the back end for updating to the next version, because there's all of those different aspects that have to play nice with the new version of Android coming in. I guess the question is then, are we able to give a Samsung a pass for that, considering the value that they're offering through those features? Or is it, that's great, but that's a choice you're making at the sacrifice of like user security, usability, all this other stuff? I don't know the answer, but those are the questions, you know, that I think James is kind of referring to here.
I think some of it will be just a case for Samsung wanting to have the limelight when their update drops. I don't know if anyone's even thought of that. It's just something that's kind of coming to head now, that Samsung will kind of holding back and risking user security is beneficial to them because they have an update window that is set back from the rest of the industry. So maybe they get a lion's share of coverage and I don't know, fan... not pushback, but kind of like the fans will like the fact that they've got their update when they've got their update. As you said, they've improved recently in recent years, but from the hardcore perspective, it's not good enough, is it? But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what hardcore Samsung fans think, if they don't mind waiting, risking a little bit of device security for their update to come later down the line with more potential features on the table, and yeah, on how Samsung's marketing strategy kind of fits into that.
Yeah, indeed. Interesting stuff. Well, James, thank you for being
the email of the week.
Got some discussion out of that one. That's pretty good.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
That's job. Why James got the email of the week. All right. Cool. I'm happy that we yes, thank you, Burke. Don't get too excited though, Burke. We're done. We've reached the end of this episode of All About Android. What a great episode it was. It's always so much fun talking with people who love Android as much as we do. And Damien, such a pleasure getting you on, man. Thank you for sacrificing your sleep for us tonight. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
So people want to follow you online. Obviously, your work is on 9to5 Google. You are writing as well as producing video. I feel like you put up a couple of videos a week, and then you have the podcast as well. If people want to follow all the stuff that you're up to, like, what would you tell them?
Follow it.
I suppose
do me a favor and subscribe, and just subscribe to the YouTube channel and subscribe to the daily podcast. It's not in depth as All About Android, but it's a little bit of a tidbit and maybe a bite-sized chunk of Android news of the day.
Right on. If they want to follow you on Twitter, where can they do so?
Yeah, that's at I am Damien Wild. So just my name. Make sure there's an E in the Damien as well. A-N is not correct.
Oh, okay.
D-A-M-I-A-N. No, it has to be an E.
An I-E-N, and then an E at the end of Wild as well. So
yes,
you're very
E
heavy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Damien. It's a pleasure getting you on. We'll bring you back here real soon. We appreciate it. Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Ron, what do you want to talk about?
Not much. I think we're at the end of the show. Just go to twitter.com/RonXO or instagram.com/RonXO and follow me. That's all I got this week. I just live for the Android. So.
Wow. That's a light tease there. Thank you, Ron. Turn back on that air conditioning, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the wrap up.
All right, Flo, what about you?
Okay, I'll try not to keep this long. I got a new toy. I got a Tamagotchi. So that is a thing that happened in my life.
It's amazing. How much time are you spending on that?
Well, right now I just use the bathroom, so I'm cleaning that up. Okay. And when I'm not taking care of the Tamagotchi, I'm writing. And recently I wrote about Chromebooks. Right now I'm writing about mechanical keyboards, and I'm writing about so much stuff in the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of stuff coming for me. You can just stay tuned to florenceion.com, which I kind of did like a quick little, you know, new layout there last week. And you know, I still have the Ask Flo. If you want to send me a message, ask me some questions. I've been putting away some of those questions to answer. It's just I've got a lot of stuff to get through these next couple of weeks. So, yeah.
Right on. Thank you, Flo, for all you do. And thanks to Victor and Burke for all they do. Victor working behind the scenes to turn around this episode. Burke working behind the scenes to push buttons and play sound effects for us and occasionally talk. Yeah, there we go. I knew that was coming. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. You can find me all over the Twit Network doing shows here, of course, twit.tv/HOA for Hands on Android. If you like All About Android and you want more Android content, these are little bite-sized episodes that focus on a particular aspect of Android. It's really about using your Android devices with other devices. Last week's episode was all about reminders on Android. This week's episode is going to be about Family Bell, the new assistant feature that came out last week, and it's actually pretty great, and you don't have to have a family in order for it to get some real use out of it. So twit.tv/HOA is where you go for that. Don't miss, if you didn't know, if you happen to have an Amazon Echo device, Amazon has a flash briefing, and we do a flash briefing every week. And in fact, we have an All About Android flash briefing that happens, I think, every Friday morning. So go on to your Amazon device, do a search for This Week in Tech. You can find the Twit flash briefing and add that, and you'll get little bite-sized Twit things in the morning every day on your Echo device. So check it out. Do not forget to wear a mask, please. You're saving lives when you do that. That is it for this week. Thanks so much for watching and listening. The podcast publishes every Tuesday evening at twit.tv/AAA. That's where you can go to subscribe, and we hope that you will subscribe. And yeah, I think we've reached the end. So we'll say goodbye and see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Be sure to check out the other shows on the network, like my other show, Hands-On Wellness. I love to share different tips and tricks that's going to help you get a better grasp on your personal wellness. Just go to twit.tv/how and subscribe now.